Welcome, welcome, dear listeners, to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, the podcast where the eerie, the odd, and the outright undead come to life. I'm your host, the Tale Teller, and today we're stepping into a post-apocalyptic mystery with a twist sharper than Sherlock Holmes's wit. Yes, that's right, folks. Our favourite pipe-smoking detective is taking on a zombie apocalypse. Picture this: cobblestone streets, Victorian manors, and hordes of the undead shambling about while Holmes mutters, "Elementary, my dear decomposing friend." Tonight's tale is packed with clever deductions, snappy internal monologues, and enough creeping dread to make you double-check your locks. So, light your lanterns, grab a strong cup of tea, and prepare to unravel the case of Sherlock Holmes and the Shadows of the Dead. And before we dive in, I am lucky enough to have a brand new white tea warlord. A huge thank you to Sangeetha Sagar for upping their support to white tea warlord. That is four now. I am truly blessed. Thank you so much, Sangeetha, for your amazing support. And I can't wait to get your story back on here as well. Now, without much more ado, turn the lights off, the sound up, and let's find out what Sherlock's up to. Sherlock Holmes and the Shadows of the Dead. Chapter 1. Ashes of Old Kingsbridge. In the desolate remains of England, where ash hung in the air like an unbroken veil, and the earth bore the scars of an endless siege, there stood the fortified town of Kingsbridge. It was a fragment of a world long gone, a place that survived not through grandeur, but through stubbornness. High stone walls, hastily bolstered with timber and jagged scraps of iron, encircled what remained of life within. Outside, only the dead walked, their ceaseless groans a testament to humanity's great undoing. Kingsbridge had been a bustling market town once, known for its fairs and its thriving wool trade. Now, fewer than 100 souls remained, clinging to a tenuous existence. Food was scarce, water rationed, and trust even rarer. Every man and woman was a watchman, a labourer, and a survivor. The town's walls were the only certainty, yet even they showed the strain of time. In a small cottage near the town square, Sherlock Holmes sat at a makeshift workbench. The room was meticulously ordered, a stark contrast to the chaos outside. Vials of strange powders and hastily labelled flasks lined the shelves, a set of scales balanced perfectly in the centre. A violin rested untouched on the mantel, a silent reminder of more civilised days. Holmes rose from his seat, his lean frame moving with an energy that belied the heaviness of his surroundings. His mind, however, was a restless storm. The town irritated him. It was too quiet, too orderly. A place like Kingsbridge, teetering on the edge of oblivion, should have been rife with chaos. Instead, it had settled into an uneasy peace that he found unnatural. Watson had remarked earlier that Kingsbridge was fortunate, its people decent and cooperative. Holmes had dismissed the thought immediately. The doctor, ever an optimist, was blinded by his own good nature. To Holmes, there was no such thing as fortune or decency, only human nature, raw and predictable. A town so placid in such dire circumstances was hiding something. The knock at the door interrupted his musings. It was sharp, hurried, and insistent. An urgent summons. Holmes opened the door to find Clara Miller, the baker's wife, standing before him. Her face was pale, her breath coming in ragged gasps. She spoke quickly, her words tumbling over each other in a rush of panic. Her husband, Henry, had vanished in the night, she said, with no trace of where he might have gone. Holmes listened in silence, his sharp eyes noting the torn hem of her dress and the trembling in her hands. She was clearly distressed, but not entirely surprised. An undercurrent of inevitability clung to her words. He asked where Henry had last been seen, his tone calm but edged with impatience, as if the answer were already obvious to him. She gestured towards their home, and Holmes nodded curtly, signalling her to lead the way. As they walked through the narrow streets of Kingsbridge, Holmes's mind churned. A disappearance, he thought, was an anomaly worth examining. In a place like this, where every soul was accounted for each night, to vanish without a trace was no small feat. It required either cunning, desperation, or outside intervention, none of which boded well. When they reached the miller's cottage, Holmes immediately began his examination. The house was small, its furnishings simple but well kept. There was no sign of struggle. A mug of tea sat untouched on the table, its contents cold, suggesting that Henry had been interrupted. The door frame bore faint scratches, too precise to be the work of the undead. Holmes crouched, running his fingers along the marks, noting the angle and depth with a flicker of satisfaction. Someone had unlocked this door with intent. He stood and turned to Clara, who was wringing her hands and pacing nervously. Her worry was genuine, but Holmes sensed there was more beneath the surface, something she wasn't saying. He questioned her in measured tones, asking about Henry's habits, his mood in the days leading up to his disappearance. She answered each query haltingly, her gaze darting toward Watson, as if seeking his reassurance. Watson, ever the empathetic observer, murmured a few words of comfort, though his concern was palpable. Holmes, on the other hand, remained unmoved. He was not here to soothe feelings, but to extract facts. Facts, he thought, had no need for gentleness. Outside the cottage, the investigation continued. A faint trail of blood led from the door towards the eastern wall of the town. Holmes followed it with practiced precision, his movements deliberate and methodical. At the base of the wall, he found a scrap of fabric caught on a jagged edge of metal. It was coarse, sturdy, part of a guard's uniform. The finding did not surprise him. The guards were among the few who moved freely in and out of Kingsbridge, and their authority often shielded them from scrutiny. If one of them had a hand in Henry's disappearance, it would explain much. Holmes pocketed the scrap and returned to the square, where he sought out the gate guards. The man he sought, Samuel Pritchard, was seated in the mess hall, his posture stiff and his eyes darting nervously. When questioned, Pritchard denied any involvement, his voice defensive and his excuses clumsy. He claimed ignorance, insisting he'd been at his post all night. Holmes, unimpressed, observed the man's trembling hands and the bead of sweat forming at his temple. Pritchard was lying, though the full extent of his deceit was not yet clear. The man reeked of guilt, enough to betray himself but not enough to confess. Holmes pressed further, his questions growing sharper, his words slicing through Pritchard's flimsy defences. The guard's denials grew weaker until finally, with a mumbling admission, he revealed that Henry had been seen near the eastern gate, attempting to leave the town. Pritchard had confronted him, but Henry had fled into the night. The guard had not pursued him, claiming it was too dangerous. Holmes listened to the account with an expression of cold disdain. He had little patience for cowardice, masquerading as caution. As Pritchard stammered through his explanation, Holmes was already forming his next steps. Henry's trail would lead beyond the walls, into the desolation where the undead roamed. Whatever had drawn him out there, Holmes would find it, and when he did, he suspected it would be only the beginning of something far darker. Holmes and Watson left Kingsbridge that evening, their footsteps carrying them into the foggy expanse beyond the gates. The sun hung low, casting long shadows across the barren landscape. In the distance, the faint groans of the dead could be heard, mingling with the rustle of wind through skeletal trees. As they moved deeper into the wasteland, Holmes's thoughts returned to Kingsbridge. The town's uneasy quiet, the unspoken tension among its people, the strange disappearance of a single man. It all pointed to a deeper mystery. He had always believed that the world was a puzzle, its pieces scattered and waiting to be assembled. Here, in the ashes of Kingsbridge, the puzzle was taking shape, and it was a shape that filled him with foreboding. Chapter 2, The Pale Horizon. The world beyond the gates of Kingsbridge was a testament to the slow decay of civilization. Skeletal trees jutted skyward, their bare branches clawing at a slate-grey sky. The ground, once fertile with England's rich soil, was now cracked and littered with ash. Silence ruled here, broken only by the distant groans of the undead and the occasional rustle of wind across forgotten remnants of life. Holmes moved with purpose, his lean frame cutting a deliberate path across the desolation. Watson trailed behind him, rifle in hand, his eyes scanning their surroundings. They had found Henry's trail easily enough, a scattering of disturbed earth and faint smears of blood leading into the horizon. It was a trail that promised answers, though Holmes knew they would come at a price. He examined the path before him, his mind dissecting every detail, the weight of the footsteps suggesting haste, while the uneven spacing betrayed panic. The blood drops, faint and irregular, hinted at a superficial wound rather than a mortal one. He imagined the scene in his mind, Henry fleeing into the night, his breaths ragged, his every movement driven by desperation. Yet there was something amiss. The trail did not suggest a random flight. Henry's path was too direct, too determined. He had a destination in mind. Holmes concluded, though what could lie beyond the safety of Kingsbridge? That was worth such a risk? Well, that remained a mystery. Watson broke the silence, his voice quiet and careful, as though unwilling to disturb the fragile stillness around them. He commented on the danger of their venture, the unpredictability of the undead, and the madness of following a man who might already be dead. Holmes did not respond immediately. He rarely indulged Watson's habits of verbalizing the obvious. His thoughts were already elsewhere, unraveling the threads of the case and weaving them into a coherent narrative. He found Watson's caution admirable but unnecessary. Fear, he mused, was the currency of this new world, and he refused to be indebted to it. They continued in silence, their only company the faint whispers of the wind. The trail led them to a derelict barn perched atop a hill. Its wooden frame sagged with the weight of time, its roof caved in at one corner. The structure looked as though a strong gust might topple it, but it stood defiantly, a lone sentinel in the wasteland. Holmes paused at the edge of the hill, his sharp eyes scanning the barn. He noted the way the ground around it was trampled, as though something or someone had been circling it repeatedly. He gestured for Watson to stop, his hand rising in a sharp, deliberate motion. There was a faint noise from within the barn, a soft, rhythmic thudding. It was not the sound of the undead. Holmes had become attuned to the groans and shuffles of the reanimated, and this was something else entirely. It was human, purposeful. He moved closer, his footsteps silent against the ash-covered ground. Watson followed, his grip tightening on his rifle. Inside the barn, the air was heavy with the scent of decay. Straw littered the floor, though much of it had rotted away, leaving a damp, unpleasant mulch. The thudding sound grew louder as they entered, echoing off the warped wooden walls. Holmes's gaze swept the room, his eyes narrowing as he took in the scene. In the center of the barn stood a figure, Henry Miller. He was alive, though barely. His body swayed as he drove a shovel into the earth, his movements slow and mechanical. His face was pale, his eyes glassy, and his skin slick with sweat. He did not look up as they approached, his focus entirely on the hole he was digging. Holmes stepped forward, his voice sharp and commanding as he addressed Henry. The man did not respond. His hands continued their grim work. Watson moved to intervene, but Holmes raised a hand to stop him. He crouched by the edge of the hole, examining the disturbed earth. It was loose and black, wet with a viscous substance that glistened unnaturally in the dim light. He ran a gloved finger through it, noting its texture and odor. It was not just soil. It was contaminated, tainted by something foreign. Holmes stood, his gaze fixed on Henry. He asked a single, precise question, his tone devoid of emotion. Why? Henry froze. Slowly, he lifted his head, his eyes meeting Holmes's. There was a flicker of recognition, followed by a wave of anguish. He opened his mouth to speak, but no words came out. Instead, he collapsed to the ground, his body racked with violent tremors. Watson rushed to his side, his medical instincts taking over. He examined Henry quickly, noting the man's shallow breath and the dark veins spreading across his neck. It was not an infection he recognized, though it bore the hallmarks of something deeply unnatural. Holmes watched in silence, his mind racing. Henry's condition was no accident. It was deliberate, orchestrated. Someone had led him here, had used him for a purpose Holmes had yet to uncover. As Watson worked, a low groan echoed through the barn. It was faint at first, but it grew steadily louder, reverberating through the walls. Holmes turned towards the sound, his gaze narrowing as he realized its source. From the shadows at the far end of the barn, figures began to emerge. They were human in shape, but wrong in every other way. Their skin was mottled and discolored, their movement unnervingly precise. These were not the mindless undead that roamed the wasteland. They were something else. Something far worse. Holmes stepped back, his voice sharp, as he called for Watson to retreat. The doctor hesitated, his hand still pressed to Henry's chest, but Holmes's tone left no room for argument. The figures moved closer, their forms becoming clearer in the dim light. Their eyes burned with a strange, unnatural glow, and their mouths opened in silent screams. This was something else. Holmes's mind raced. The creatures before him were not driven by hunger or instinct. They had a purpose, a reason for being here, and that reason, he realized, was tied to Henry Miller. As the first of the creatures lunged forward, Holmes turned and ran. Watson close behind him, the barn echoed with the sound of pursuit, the groans of the creatures mingling with the pounding of their boots on the rotted floor. They burst into the open air, the creatures spilling out behind them. Holmes had scanned the horizon, calculating their odds of escape. The undead was slow, but their numbers were growing. He led Watson towards the tree line. His thoughts were racing as they moved. The answers he sought lay ahead, but for the first time in years, he felt the creeping edge of doubt. Kingsbridge, he realized, was not a sanctuary. It was a trap waiting to spring. And the shadows beyond its walls were darker than he had ever imagined. Chapter 3. The Breach. The forest loomed ahead, its skeletal branches clawing at the grey sky. Holmes and Watson sprinted toward it, their boots pounding against the uneven ground. Behind them, the grotesque figures from the barn moved in eerie unison, their glowing eyes piercing the dim haze. They were relentless, and their silence was far more unnerving than the groans of the undead. Holmes calculated the distance to the tree line with precision. The creatures were faster than the shambling dead, but their movements lacked the chaotic desperation of living pursuers. It was as though they followed a singular directive, a chilling efficiency in their pace. They were not hunting. They were reclaiming. Holmes glanced back briefly, his mind snapping through possibilities. The barn, the soil, the creatures. They were pieces of a larger puzzle, one that now implicated Kingsbridge itself. His deduction was grim. Whatever had infected Henry Miller was not confined to the barn. It was spreading, and Kingsbridge, with his unnatural calm, was either the source or the next target. Watson's voice cut through the haze of his thoughts, strained but steady, as he called out Holmes's name. The doctor was lower, his rifle slung awkwardly over his shoulder as he struggled to keep pace. Holmes slowed his stride, his mind racing through strategies. He calculated the weight of the rifle, Watson's endurance, the proximity of the pursuers, and concluded there was no time for hesitation. They reached the edge of the forest just as the first of the creatures lunged towards them. Holmes shoved Watson forward, then pivoted sharply, drawing his knife. He slashed with precision, the blade slicing through decaying sinew. The creature stumbled, his movements briefly disrupted, but it did not fall. Instead, it turned its glowing gaze toward Holmes, its mouth stretched into a grotesque approximation of a grin. Holmes felt a rare flicker of unease. These things did not respond to pain or injury like the undead. There was something else entirely, something that defied his understanding. They seemed to relish the attack. "Keep moving," he barked at Watson, his tone sharp, his mind snapping back to control. The two plunged deeper into the forest, weaving through the twisted trees. The air was colder, heavier, as if the land itself recoiled from what pursued them. The creatures followed, their glowing eyes cutting through the shadows. Holmes noted every detail, the way the creatures moved without sound, the faint traces of blackened soil that marked their passage, the strange rhythmic pattern of their approach. They were not mindless, nor were they alive. They were tools, instruments of a purpose yet unseen. They reached a narrow stream, its water sluggish and dark. Holmes knelt by its edge, his hands moving quickly as he gathered mud and smeared across his face and clothing. Watson, breathless and bewildered, stared at him. Holmes explained in clipped sentences, his voice calm despite their peril. The creatures, he deduced, relied on more than sight. Their movement suggested a sensitivity to something beyond the physical, perhaps scent, or even the faint electrical impulses of the living. Camouflage might buy them a moment, a hesitation that could tip the odds in their favor. Watson, to his credit, followed suit without question, smearing the cold muck over his own skin. Holmes allowed himself a brief moment of appreciation for his companion's pragmatism. In this new world, Watson's loyalty was one of the few constants Holmes could rely on. The creatures reached the stream moments later, their glowing eyes scanning the bank. Holmes and Watson crouched low, their breathing shallow, their movements imperceptible. The lead creature stepped into the water, its pale skin rippling as it waded forward. It paused, tilting its head as though listening. Holmes's pulse quickened. The creature's silence was deafening, its stillness unnerving. Then, with deliberate slowness, it turned and gestured to the others. The creatures dispersed, their forms vanishing into the shadows. Holmes waited several minutes before rising, his mind racing. This was not a retreat. It was a recalibration. As the pair emerged from the forest, the walls of Kingsbridge came into view. The sight was no comfort. Holmes's earlier suspicions about the town now weighed heavily on his mind. The creatures, whatever they were not random. They were directed. And if the barn was an outpost, then Kingsbridge was the next logical step in their expansion. Watson began to speak, his voice edged with frustration and fatigue. He questioned why Henry had fled, what connection the creatures had to the town, and why Holmes had said so little about his deductions. Holmes allowed him to vent, his own thoughts too preoccupied to respond. The answers, he knew, were within Kingsbridge itself. But how far the infection had spread, and who within the town was complicit, that remained to be seen. The gates of Kingsbridge opened reluctantly, the guards peering warily at the two men as they returned. The townsfolk gathered in small clusters, their whispers filling the square. Word of Henry Miller's disappearance had spread quickly, and now their eyes were fixed on Holmes and Watson, their faces a mixture of hope and deep suspicion. His focus on the task ahead. He informed the guards in curt tones that the eastern wall needed immediate reinforcement. His manner was commanding, leaving no room for argument. The guards, though bristling at his tone, nodded and moved to comply. Watson, meanwhile, headed for the infirmary, his medical instincts driving him to check on the town's health. Holmes noted his departure with a faint sense of relief. Watson's kindness would serve as a buffer, keeping the townsfolk calm while Holmes pursued the truth. Holmes returned to his quarters, his mind ablaze with theories. He set to work immediately, cataloguing the soil samples he had taken from the barn and comparing them to the earth beneath Kingsbridge. The results were both intriguing and unsettling. The blackened soil from the barn contained trace of an unknown substance, organic but altered. It pulsed faintly under his microscope as though alive. When he tested it against the soil from Kingsbridge, he found faint traces of the same contamination. Holmes leaned back in his chair, his expression grim. The infection had already begun to creep into Kingsbridge, and its origin was no longer a question of speculation. The truth, as it of, The truth, as it so often did, lay in the shadows. Chapter 4, Threads of Infection. Kingsbridge breathed easily. The faint hum of daily life, bartered goods, muted conversations, the clang of tools repairing gates, was overlaid with a tension that was almost tangible. Whispers flitted like moths from one corner of the town to another, their subject always the same: the missing Henry Miller, the returning Holmes and Watson, and the dread that followed them like a shadow. Inside his quarters, Holmes sat at his makeshift laboratory, the only sound the faint clinking of glass and the scratch of his pen as he scribbled notes with feverish precision. On the table before him were the samples he had gathered, the blackened soil from the barn, traces of ash from the forest, and faint smears of viscous substances that had clung to Henry's skin. Each told part of a story, and it was Holmes's task to assemble them into something coherent. The substance, whatever it was, defied classification. It behaved like a parasite, but bore none of the hallmarks of life as he knew it. It pulsed faintly under the microscope, reacting to light and movement in a way that suggested intent. It was neither plant nor animal, and its closest comparison was something fungal, though infinitely more complex. Holmes frowned, his mind dissecting the possibilities. The creature from the barn was not mere carriers of this infection. They were its tools, its extensions. The infection had a purpose, and that purpose was directed. This realization, though, sent a cold shiver through him, though he dismissed it quickly. Fear, after all, was a distraction. The faint creak of the door pulled in from his thoughts. Watson entered, his expression grim, his hand still bearing traces of dried blood from the infirmary. He set his rifle against the wall with the heaviness of a man who has seen too much in too short a time. Holmes glanced at him briefly, taking in the tension in his shoulders and the exhaustion in his movements. Watson spoke of the infirmary, of Clara Miller, and the other townsfolk who had come seeking reassurance. Clara, he said, had descended into near hysteria, her mind consumed with grief and guilt. The rest of the town mirrored her unease, their questions probing at the edges of things they dared not name. Had the infection reached them? Was Kingsbridge safe? Holmes offered no reassurances. Safety, he thought, was a lie the weak told themselves to endure another day. Kingsbridge was not safe, nor had it ever been. Watson pressed further, his voice sharp with frustration. Why had Holmes not shared more of his findings? What was the connection between the barn, the creatures, and Henry's disappearance? Holmes did not answer directly, his focus returning to his work. Watson's anger was justified, but irrelevant. The truth Holmes knew was far worse than anything Watson suspected. Holmes left their quarters late that night, his movements purposeful but unhurried. The streets were emptied, the town lit only by the faint glow of torches along the walls. The air was heavy, carrying the faint scent of ash and decay that seemed to permeate everything now. He moved towards the eastern wall, his sharp eyes scanning the ground as he walked. The soil here was disturbed, patches of it darker than the surrounding earth. He crouched, running his fingers through the loose dirt, and felt the faint, unnatural warmth beneath. The infection was spreading. Holmes's mind turned over the implications. If the infection could travel through the soil, then Kingsbridge was already compromised. The barn had been an outpost, a staging ground, but the infection's true origin, its source, remained elusive. And yet Holmes suspected he was closer to the answer than he wanted to be. He straightened out, brushing the dirt from his hand, and turned back towards the square. The faint sound of movement caught his attention, and he froze, his senses sharpening. From the shadows between two buildings, a figure emerged. At first glance, it was human, a man wrapped in a tattered coat, his movements jerky and uneven. But as he stepped into the torchlight, the truth became evident. His eyes glowed faintly, their unnatural light casting eerie shadows across his face. His skin bore the mottled discoloration of the infected, and his mouth opened in a silent scream. Holmes stood his ground, his mind racing. This was no mindless undead, no shambling remnant of life. This was something far worse. The creature lunged toward him, its movement unnervingly quick. Holmes sidestepped with practiced precision. his knife again flashing as he slashed at his arm. The blade connected, severing flesh and sinew, but the creature did not falter. It turned its glowing eyes fixed on him, and Holmes confirmed in his thoughts that it was not driven by pain or survival, but by purpose. Without a doubt this time. Before the creature could attack again, a sharp crack echoed through the square. The creature's head snapped back, and it collapsed to the ground. Watson emerged from the shadows, rifle in hand, his expression a mixture of relief and anger. Holmes surveyed the fallen creature, his mind already cataloging its movements, its behavior, its purpose. This was no isolated incident. The infection was already within Kingsbridge, and this was only the beginning. It had breached the outskirts. But who is letting them in? Or how are people being infected? The next morning, the town was alive with fear. The sight of the creature's body dragged into the square and left for all to see had ignited a firestorm of whispers and accusations. The guards tightened their patrols, and the townsfolk avoided each other's eyes, as if the infection might leap from one body to another through mere contact. Holmes stood in the square, his arms crossed as he watched the chaos unfold. Watson was speaking to the crowd, his voice steady but strained, as he explained what little they knew. The infection was not a sickness, he said, but something more insidious. Its spread was slow, deliberate, and targeted. Holmes said nothing, his sharp mind turning over the pieces of the puzzle. The infection, the creatures, the silence that had settled over Kingsbridge in recent months, it all pointed to one conclusion. Someone within the town was working against them, and Holmes, ever the hunter of truths, would find them. And so ends part one of this episode set. I hope you loved the Sherlock Holmes zombie apocalyptic spin. This story is dedicated to the lovely white tea warlord that is Joseph Schroeder. I know your passion for zombie tales, mate, and this one is aimed at your lovely self. So I hope you're enjoying the very first part of this story. I'll be continuing it next Monday as well, so rest assured I won't keep you waiting. If you had time traveled back to Baker Street, and you got a chance to meet Sherlock Holmes in person, this is without, or rather sans zombie apocalypse, what would be the kind of questions you would ask him? I'm not sure what I'd ask Sherlock Holmes. Maybe as a means to work with him in some capacity, that'd be fun, and just find out how he works. What are your thoughts? Now, legends, if you want to reach me for any reason, you can do so via email, which is www.storiesfablesghostlytales@gmail.com. If you want to support the show to get early access episodes, you can visit my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/SFGT. And feel free to support at any tier. Any tier means you get early access to episodes, like I mentioned, and also high quality audio. Plus my eternal thanks. A big thank you in advance for considering. Now, I want to jump right on in to thanking the legends that already support the show. Let's get on in. My Ode Night Tea Titan. Matthew Starr, the Titan of Deduction, the Master of Mystery. The Stellar King of Sherlockian Support. If there's a dark shadow creeping through this podcast, we all know you'd spot it first. Your passion for storytelling and your sharp mind would give Sherlock Holmes himself a run for his money. I can see it now. Sherlock Holmes and the Shadows of the Dead, featuring Matthew Starr as the brilliant co-detective. Watson wouldn't stand a chance, let's be real. Thank you so much, mate, for your support. This podcast is solving mysteries, uncovering horrors, and chasing down the most elusive tales. You, Matto Star, are a vital part of the story. Whether it's brewing tea in Baker Street or hunting down curses in tonight's tale, you're the titan that keeps this game afoot. From dedication to loyalty and the wonderful human being that puts a smile on my face with your comments, Matthew, you're like the unsung genius behind the podcast curtain, always making sure this spooky train's lights are pumping and bubbling away. Thank you, mate, for being a shining star to me. Thanks for always putting a smile on my face and supporting me at your legendary tier. Pal, have a fantastic, brilliant week ahead of yourself. And I'm looking forward to sending more emails your way, buddy. Thanks, Matto. You're a legend. And now I want to thank my amazing, brilliant White Tea Warlord, I am lucky to have four living legends. First up is Lesnarsaurus Rex. Lesnar, the gym-dominating legend who could probably bench press an entire haunted house and still have energy for cardio, which I actually hate. Cardio, that is. If ghosts dared to cross your path, I'd feel sorry for them. Thank you for flexing your support muscles, keeping this podcast strong enough to lift even the heaviest of tales. Dudio, I hope your gym session is absolutely banging. Have a fantastic week ahead of yourself. And as always, thank you so much for your support and for being my friend. Stay awesome, mate. And my next White Tea Warlord, Joseph Schroeder. Joseph, the ultimate zombie-slaying, apocalypse-surviving legend. If a horde of the undead showed up at my door, I'd be like, hold on, let me just get Joseph. You'd have a survival plan, a machete named Judgment Day, and probably a zombie-sniffing dog ready to go. Honestly, the zombies just don't have a chance. Somehow, we need your prowess as Watson. What do you say, Joseph? Would you help Sherlock Holmes in this situation? Be his right-hand man. Thank you for bringing your killer instincts, your killer support, and for being my pal. Thank you so much, Joseph. Have an awesome week ahead of you, and cheers again for being my pal. My next White Tea Warlord is Maya, the Queen of Cats, Master of Mysteries, and now, potentially, a sidekick to Sherlock Holmes in the battle against zombie hordes. Imagine this, Holmes is piercing together clues, zombies are clawing at the door, and your army of cats is out there, tripping the undead and batting their decomposing faces into submission. It's elementary, really. Cats win every time. Thank you, Maya, for bringing your feline finesse, your sharp mind, and your royal support to the podcast. Cheers, mate, and thanks for being my pal. Have a epic week ahead of you. You're wonderful. And my next White Tea Warlord, Sangeetha Sagar, the Dreamwalker extraordinaire. Gliding through the spirit world with grace and wisdom, your connection to the unseen adds an air of ethereal wonder to this podcast. Thank you for weaving your dreams into these tales and for being a guiding light through the shadows. Cheers, Sangeetha, and I'm reading through your story tonight. So rest assured, it'll be being worked on ASAP. A huge thank you again to my White Tea Warlords, and now to my steadfast Earl Grey forces and below, the brave guardian standing watch over this spooky little corner of the podcasting world, let's give a thunderous round of applause for Jessica Garcia, Michael Krupp, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juice Box Andy, Joss Heather, Peter Raffaelli, and Chad Warren. Your support keeps the tea brewing, the stories chilling, and the shadows lingering just a little longer. Thank you, you amazing listeners out there. You're the best allies a tale teller could ask for. Cheers. And as I always say, till next we meet.
Whisper secrets untold, ghostly tales centuries old. In the shadows mysteries unfold. Listeners gather brave and bold. Stories, fables, ghostly tales. In every shadow, a truth unveils. As the night around us prevails, every whispered secret sails. Round the fire, eyes wide with fear. Unseen, draw near, blurring lines between what's clear, between the real and what appears. In the night's embrace, we find tales that haunt the mind, forever in the dark entwined. Ghostly tales forever.
Thesaurus, Joseph, Mayo, and Sangeetha. Have a great